The Barbershop Pirate by Brian Miller. Brian Miller lives in Iowa City, Iowa, with his wife Priscilla, who is also blind. Both are active members of the National Federation of the Blind, and both are two-time recipients of scholarships in the Federation's National Scholarship Program. Brian is working on a doctorate in history at the University of Iowa. In The Barbershop Pirate, he demonstrates that success doesn't just happen. It has components: desire, hard work, persistence, belief, generosity, to name a few. And Brian puts them all to work in reaching his goal. Here is how he tells his story. What comes to mind when imagining a pirate? What do you see? A ship flying the Jolly Roger? Men who haven't shaved or bathed in months, with bandanas on their heads and cutlasses in their mouths? Does your imaginary pirate have a peg leg, a parrot, a bottle of rum, or perhaps a patch over one eye? How about a patch over both eyes? Can you imagine a blind pirate sailing the Caribbean in search of buried treasure and coastal towns to plunder? Before joining the NFB, I could neither imagine a blind pirate nor believe that I could play the part of a pirate on stage before hundreds of people. To me, a pirate is more than an outlaw. A pirate embodies adventure, a willingness to take risks, to walk the plank if need be, with the hope of making one's fortune. Growing up, I always believed I had at least some of this pirate spirit in me. When I became totally blind at the age of 21, I thought my days of adventure might be over. In high school and college, one of the ways I exercised my pirate spirit was on stage, either acting in plays or singing in choral ensembles. I had always been legally blind, but I did not use a white cane to get on or off the stage or use Braille to learn my lines. I feared that first moment of walking out onto the stage when the lights would hit my eyes and make me totally blind for several long minutes. I tried to fix this problem by peeking out from behind the curtains before I was to make my entrance, to get the shock of the lights out of the way before setting foot in front of the audience. Whatever I did, I was keen never to appear blind. After what little sight I had was lost, I could no longer use tricks to pretend I could see. I had either to learn new skills or hang up my cutlass for good. A few years passed in which my personal pirate ship remained in dry dock. I never lost my love of performing, however, especially my love of singing and music. I knew I had to find an outlet, some way to launch my pirate spirit, even if only to sail around the harbor. I never believed that my skills as a crooner would earn me a living. Teaching would suffice to pay the bills. But I always knew I would have to make room for music somewhere in my daily routine. A friend familiar with my love of singing suggested I check out the local barbershop chorus. This group sang all a cappella, and as an amateur group provided an informal environment for men to turn their love of music into a hobby. I called the chorus secretary to find out when they had meetings, and he offered to pick me up and give me a ride. I thought this was terrific since I did not drive, but I was nervous because I had not told this man I was blind. He arrived at my door at 6:30 p.m. and whisked me off to chorus rehearsal without so much as a comment about my long white cane. At this time, I was still unsure of myself as a blind person, often feeling acute embarrassment upon meeting strangers who did not know I was blind, fearing they might come unwound at discovering my blindness. That first night of chorus, I was pushed up onto the risers to sing with the whole group, some 75 men. A few guys moved over and made room for me in the tenor section. Some of them held sheets of music, which I could not see, of course, but it did not matter. Gary, the tenor section leader, leaned over to me and said, "Don't worry, half the guys here can't read music. Just listen to me and sing what I do." I did that, and I discovered quickly that my fellow chorus mates were far less interested in whether or not I could see than whether or not I could sing. Some members of the chorus assumed that because I was blind, I was a natural virtuoso vocalist. I quickly proved that, like many of my riser mates, I sorely needed ear and voice training before I would be singing at my full potential. I was given learning tapes with my voice part on them so I could practice at home. Many of the sighted chorus members use this same training technique. That year, I joined the San Diego Sun Harbor Chorus, and I also joined the National Federation of the Blind. My love of music had conquered my fear of going to places by myself, where people did not know I was blind, but the NFB would give me the skills and confidence I needed to go much further. Confidence would mean not only asserting myself in situations, so people unsure of my skills as a blind person would see quickly that I could do whatever I intended to accomplish, but confidence meant I would push myself further than I ever imagined I could go. As a barbershop chorus member, I sang in annual shows, public exhibitions, and dozens of company holiday parties. As a tenor, I was always in demand, and I was invited to sing with several quartets. Eventually, I gained enough confidence in my own ability to begin my own quartet. Several months after I joined the chorus, our group was getting ready to go to a barbershop regional competition. In the barbershop chorus and quartet world, competing is a major part of sharing the music and being an active member of the singing community. Choruses sing two songs before a large crowd and a panel of judges. In addition to singing, many choruses add some dance moves to their performance to catch the attention of the judges and to better sell the music as a package. Some 6 weeks before my chorus was to compete, the assistant director, a friend of mine, came up to me at the beginning of rehearsal and said, "The chorus music team was wondering what to do about you and competing." Puzzled, I asked, "What do you mean, do with me?" "Well, we were not sure if you thought you'd be able to learn the choreography for competition." I assured him I felt I was more than capable of doing the moves like the rest of the chorus. But even after hearing this, he added, "Well, that's fine, but perhaps, if you don't mind, we might tell the judges ahead of time that we have a blind chorus member, so they aren't caught off guard." My friend was clearly uncomfortable, and I was unsure how to respond. I was fairly certain I could learn the moves adequately enough, but I also didn't want to risk costing my chorus points if somehow I wasn't in sync with the rest of the group while on stage. How far should I push for my right to prove myself as a blind person? What if I insisted that they not tell the judges? Would they still let me perform? Was I ready to put my skills to the test when it could affect the whole group? I considered all this for a moment, then offered, "Since there are still a few weeks before we compete, why not let me work on the choreography with everyone else between now and then, and then the music committee can decide whether or not to inform the judges about my blindness?" The assistant director agreed to this, so I embarked on an intensive effort to learn all the choreography for the competition. I was determined that I would go on stage with my chorus mates without any judge being warned ahead of time that I was blind. It was not that I was embarrassed to be blind. I simply wanted to show that I could perform at the same level as everyone else on stage, and that no exceptions or excuses needed to be made because of my blindness. The next week, I went to chorus rehearsal early and found our chorus choreographer and said, "Bill, could you please show me exactly how to do the moves for these songs?" He agreed, and we met each week half an hour before rehearsal started to work together. "The trick is," Bill told me, "to remember that each move is meant to emphasize the words of the song. So once you figure out which move goes with which words, you always know when to move." He would describe the move to me, then show me by either letting me feel how his hands moved, or by moving my hands or arms to demonstrate exactly how each step was to be done. "So," Bill would say, "when you hear this phrase, start moving your hands up to the side of your head and make jazz hands." "What are jazz hands?" I asked. "Oh, hold your hands palm out to the audience and spread your fingers apart and then shake your hands back and forth like sparklers." "Got it." Numerous repetitions allowed me to internalize the choreography so I could sing and move at the same time and not worry every minute about whether I had it exactly correct. Other chorus members could watch each other or look in a mirror to gauge whether they had it right, but with practice, I could do the same moves without such references. I heard nothing from the music team until the weekend of the competition. The assistant director came up to me to ask how I was feeling about my first competition with the chorus. I told him I was excited and couldn't wait for our chance to show our stuff. He then turned to go, but came back to me as if something had just occurred to him. Oh yeah, I wanted to tell you we decided that there won't be any need to tell the judges about you ahead of time. Also, we were wondering if you would mind moving to the front row, as we think you could add a lot to the chorus's look. The front row was where all the guys with the best smiles, the best singing faces, and the most confidence with the moves were placed. I told my friend, of course I would be happy to move up to the front. I didn't tell him how much it meant to me that they had confidence in me, and that I had proven to them that their concerns about my abilities were unnecessary. When I left San Diego some 5 years ago and moved to Iowa, I knew I wanted to keep singing. I quickly found a barbershop chorus in my new town and joined its tenor section. This was a smaller, quieter chorus, and Midwesterners seemed more reserved and wary by my California standards. I worried a little about what they would think of a blind guy joining their chorus, but more importantly, I wanted to do more now than just sing. I wanted to be a part of the music team and be involved in deciding what the group would sing and where we would perform. I wanted to show that I was not just a voice, but that I could be a leader. I needed more than acceptance on their part, but I needed to prove that I had skills to offer. I had been teaching myself music theory and learning Braille musical notation. I had attended music and vocal performance workshops and chorus officer training seminars. I rarely missed a rehearsal, and I was on stage for every show and competition and community performance. It took some time, a few years in fact, of quiet, persistent commitment to my new chorus, but it paid off. After singing with the Iowa City Old Capitol Chorus for a couple of years, the chapter president approached me and asked if I would consider serving on the board as music VP, an elected position. My job would be to work with the director and assistant director to select all the music the chorus would sing and develop each week's rehearsal agenda, as well as the themes and music for our annual shows and competitions. I agreed to serve, and I was elected unanimously. Again, it is unlikely that my chorus mates fully appreciated what it meant to me as a blind person to be elected to the chorus board, but this was fine. They did not need to know. It was more important to be serving my chorus and showing what I could do than to be admired or told I am an inspiration and never be asked to contribute. Being an active member of my chorus is another way of being part of my community, as I stand on the risers with other teachers, mechanics, administrators, lawyers, and pharmacists. There was one more step I wanted to take, to push myself further as a performer. I wanted a speaking role in our chorus's annual show. I had been afraid to audition for a speaking role, as those with larger parts in our shows had to move about the stage and interact with other actors, as well as the audience. After a couple of years of indecision, I finally mustered the courage and confidence to audition for a part. That year, our show featured pirates who sang Barbershop. Something of a fantasy, obviously. I told the show manager I wanted to try out for a speaking part. He mentioned it to the scriptwriter, and he suggested I try playing the part of Seymour, nephew to Captain Black Angus. I had the script sent to me via email, and then I downloaded it to my portable note-taker, which I took to script rehearsals. I read for the part, and everyone agreed I was a perfect Seymour, the pirate who wore two patches. I used a long sword instead of a white cane to get around the stage. I had to follow the captain on and off the pirate ship, and even out to the edge of the stage. We were pirates that sang and danced in the best Gilbert and Sullivan tradition. I wanted to be sure that moving around the stage during the performance would not be a problem. I did not want to be the pirate that stumbled rather than plundered. Hours before the show, I spent some time exploring the stage and familiarized myself with all the props and the layout of the fabricated pirate ship. I practiced moving about with my sword, which I used just as I would my white cane. The difference this time was that I knew I could do it, and do it well. I no longer feared my blindness would be discovered, or that I would be a detriment to my chorus. There were more than 800 in the audience, and our show was a big hit. My chorus mates never expressed any doubt that I could do it, but I know that after the show, they had new reason to trust in my abilities. My wife later recounted several conversations she overheard in the foyer. One woman said to another, "How did that one pirate see with those patches over his eyes?" And another woman who knew me responded, "He couldn't see. He was really blind." To which the first woman said, "But how did he get around the stage like that?" The answer is that I use the same skills blind people use every day to get to work, to care for their families, or to participate in their favorite hobbies. Without the NFB, I would probably still have joined a chorus, but it was the confidence gained from my involvement with the NFB that pushed me to do more. As a blind person, it is sometimes too easy simply to be a passenger, a passive participant. I wanted to be active, to be involved in the direction my chorus took, and to take charge of the hobby that was such an important part of my life. Truthfully, wearing two patches was a bit uncomfortable, and everyone in my chorus called me Seymour for months after the show. But I don't regret for one second letting my pirate spirit loose on the world and taking up my sword, which, at least for that night, was mightier than the pen.